Okay, so we are in the week, basically within Tisha B'Av. It's not technically Shavua Shechal Boy Tisha B'Av, but Tisha B'Av is Sunday. And the foundation of all that Chassidus speaks about the approach that we should have towards Tisha B'Av is based on a pasuk that we read in Eicha, that we'll read Matzah Shabbos and Sunday before noon, and that is Tzion b'mishpat tipada, that Tzion, which is a reference or a name for Yerushalayim, or a name for Israel, or a name for the Jew, or a name for the neshama, all of that, and more, that Tzion is redeemed through judgment, and the captives of Tzion return, they come back from their captivity through tzedakah. And the Alter Rebbe says a lot in very few words, very deep and very simple, and they go together here. You know, there's a cute joke that's a tragedy, that's part of our tragedy, and it's funny, we get to laugh at it to handle it. And the joke is, just a little bit of a background, that in Poland, Chelm was the city that produced very intelligent people, and the way we deal with jealousy is one way is simply to deny that they're better than us. So it became part of Jewish culture, especially from Jews from Eastern Europe, that if you want to give an example of people that are very, like, crazy, like really, really fools, Chelem. And the story is that in Chelem, there was a person at night that was searching under a lamppost for something that he lost. And he's looking, and he's looking, and he's looking, and his friend walks by, and his friend tells him, "Let me help you. What are you looking for?" He says, "I lost my wallet." He says, "You know, do you remember exactly where?" So he says, "A block away." So he tells him, "If you lost it a block away, why are you looking here?" So he said, "Because there's no light there. There's only light over here." And okay, so that's the grace of joke, and that's not a joke because this is what we do. Let me explain to you what I mean. Most people have a huge mistake when they think that in order to live life, all I need to do is to know my goal, to know my destination. You know, you hear this, which is true. You need to know where you're going. If not, what would you do? When you leave your home, do you make a right? Do you make a left? And I don't mean literally. You have to know where you're going. What's, I would say, equally as important as to know where you're going is to know where you are at. You know, when you get lost, now with technology, you put in your GPS to the destination, you know why it helps you get out of your mess? Because it knows where you are. If all you would put in the GPS is the address, but it would not pick up your location, knowing where you're going doesn't help you. You need to know where you're at. And you need to know your destination. And then you can make a plan how to get there, if you're lucky, if you know how to make the plan. But it's not just about knowing the goal, it's about knowing where you're at. Why am I saying that? The Alter Rebbe says the following. He says that Tzion never goes and never gets hostage, never gets captured. The people in Tzion are called captives. Tzion only has to be redeemed. And he wants to analyze how would you differentiate between redeeming, redemption, and a captive becoming freed or emancipated. There is a difference. Most people don't focus on the difference. What would be the difference? What would you suggest?
Ask the question again.
The question is like this, is that there are different words that we use to define someone being stuck. Mm-hmm. To get unstuck, you have to know that you're stuck. Right? The destination is to be free. That's the destination. Like I mentioned, most people understand that, yeah, I want to be free. The reason why they'll never be free is because it's not enough to know the destination. You have to know where you're at. Only the person that sees that they're not free, and they know that there's something good called freedom, do they have a fighting chance to go from being trapped to becoming free. Everyone knows free. They tasted it sometimes. They have an imagination. Freedom, redemption, bliss, pleasure. Everything is great. Peace. Okay, this class is not to define what those words mean. They have to be better defined. But I think the big novelty for me was when you begin learning the Maamar, you begin to realize that the Alter Rebbe spends a lot of time describing two different types of captives.
So maybe it's external.
So one second. So just I want to answer. In other words, where I'm going is that there is, to become free, I have to understand free from what? And the fact that in this pasuk, the words are tzion b'mishpat tipadeh pidyon, redemption, the Alter Rebbe understands, is not the accurate word used if someone is taken captive. If someone is taking hostage, they have to become free, not redeemed.
So you're saying, what's the difference between becoming free and being redeemed?
Well, I know. I would not be able to make it up. I'm going to share that the Alter Rebbe is giving us his understanding of those words. And knowing modern Hebrew will not be of help. That I know for sure. Because he gleaned it from many other areas throughout our sages where the different words are used describing different types of oppressions, different types of jail. There's something called asleep. The words, shina. Many times when we want to describe someone who's in a non-redeemed state, we describe that person as being asleep, even in psychological terms, even amongst each other. You know, you wake up, you are asleep. Sometimes we use the words trapped. What's the difference between someone who's asleep versus someone who's trapped? Big difference in English. These are good words. Huh? That when you are asleep, you're not trapped. You just have to wake up. And when you wake up, you're good. Trapped is the tragedy, is that people that are trapped, the hostages, what are they? They said that they were hoping they'll wake up. In other words, because when you wake up, as bad as a nightmare is, the problem is only that you're sleeping. But once you're up, now you have control over yourself. Being trapped means that while you are awake, there's nothing you can do to get out of where you're at. So being asleep is much better. Bachlal, for many people, being asleep is great. We're talking about not the great part of resting. We're talking about the fact that when you are asleep, you're not really functioning. You're not you. You're not thinking. You're not doing. You're just sleeping. In that context, being asleep is still a lot better than being trapped.
It has more control.
Very good. Being asleep means that while you are asleep, you don't have that much control.
Right, but the control still...
Getting out of a slumber is infinitely easier, very good, than a person who's held hostage. Let me word it this way. When someone is held hostage or when someone is in jail, they cannot free themselves. They cannot free themselves. They need to have some other force freeing them. Very vulnerable. Have no control. Someone who is asleep...
needs knowledge.
Very good. So the Alter Rebbe goes, and this is so good, because even though that we are all trapped in a billion different places, but it's good to generalize. There are two categories of being in exile. There are two categories of being stuck. There is one type of stuck that would be a person who's in darkness, a person who simply doesn't know. And I know that it's horrible not to know. But I want you to know that going from not knowing to knowing is a lot easier than a worse type of exile, which is being trapped. Being trapped means even though you know, can't help yourself. There are many areas in life. Look at an addict. They know there's no new information you're going to give them. How many, you know, don't think about yourself, think about your kids. How many times are your kids doing something that is not okay, and you tell them it's not okay, and it doesn't help because they're doing it not because they don't know. Because if the problem would only be they don't know, then you'll be the big solution because you know. The moment you have to tell them, how many times did I have to tell you? Well, if how many times I have to tell you means that their problem is not that they don't know. They know. And even though they know, they cannot help themselves. The food is not healthy. You know it's not healthy. But you can help yourself. The alcoholic cannot help himself or herself. They know it's not good for them. And that goes to all of us. In any type of behavior, there is a type of trap. Now, we'll get to trapped in a moment. I want to go with to the first. The first is a lot easier to resolve. But before I go on, I want to give one intro, which is very important. We are right now in the 9 days. And the 9 days is a time of mourning. I don't know how many people are genuinely mourning for the temple's absence. It's very difficult to have that mourning because we never witnessed it. We were never there in our memory. How can you miss something you never had? I don't know. We know how to do that because the neshama somewhere deep down, a yid can really genuinely mourn for that which we don't have because there's something really amazing inside of us. But let me just bring it down more simple. We all are in mourning. That means that every single person that we know, especially an adult, is mourning over certain aspects of their life that they know is not okay. And part of making it okay, part of redemption, is knowing where you're at. It's impossible for a person to really know that things are not okay and they shouldn't care. It's impossible. Unless they're a psychopath. Unless you cut off your feelings. So, which by the way means that there's a healthy amount of sadness for people to have in their lives. And it's human if a person is going to spend time focusing on that which is not okay, you're going to be sad. And part of that, you're going to feel grief and you're going to be mourning over what could have been. I wish I wasn't here. I wish I was in a, I don't mean physically. First of all, that's very important. If we're going to insist on everyone mourning for the temple, only for the building, which is part of it, and not for what the Rebbe would call the inner galus, which is what we are talking about, parts of our lives in which we are trapped, then the mourning of the 9 days, and this is something that I have witnessed by some, becomes a behavior, not a feeling. You know, okay, I don't eat meat, and I don't launder the garments, and we know how difficult that is, and halavai, we have young kids, and we make a tatum that do exist or that don't exist. And then the whole thing becomes without neshama. It compounded, and I want to add something. I know I speak about this every year because it's a tragedy. I'm mourning for this tragedy. What's my tragedy? When I witnessed people, I was lucky. Maybe I was lucky. I witnessed adults that were genuinely in mourning on Tisha B'Av. Were they mourning for the Beis HaMikdash? I don't think so. I think they were mourning for what we're talking about. Because the Beis HaMikdash, the Churban Beis HaMikdash, is the root of everything that's wrong. And we have plenty of things that are wrong. And even though most people, I hope, spend most of their time focusing on the positive, but you have to spend some time focusing on what's not right to be able to go from there to right, like I'm mentioning. If you only focus on the good, you're not acknowledging on what's not good, you'll never get out of it, never. You're skipping a step. That's why in Yiddishkeit, there's mourning. If a person, God forbid, no one here should know, if a person loses a parent. So there's the time for mourning. Now, when people mourn, it's tricky. Because when you mourn, ooh, you can become depressed. when you get into how things are not good, there's a danger of falling down that rabbit hole too deep. So when a person is in genuine grief, there is a necessity to lighten the mood. There's nothing better in a Shiva house when there is real mourning at the right time to lighten the mood. Not to, God forbid, be disrespectful to the mourning. No. But, you know, you see it by every eulogy. You make people cry for the loss. And if you can just share something funny about that person, it's so helpful. Because grief is too much. So people have to be freed from their grief. And because of that, Hasidim, instead of choosing to focus on the grief, we are the ones that we represent, the ones who are trying to lighten the mood. This is true in a Shiva house. This is true of an old minig that Hasidim had, is that when people are sitting and they're mourning about everything that's wrong in their lives, you do something humorous, with tact. You do something humorous to lighten. It shouldn't be too much grief. What they used to do is that this is because we were poor. There used to be in Russia, there used to be, like here you have acorns, or you have certain, not leaves. Leaves are too leafy. There are certain berries that grow off trees that had these betalach that had thorns in them. And if they get stuck in a man's beard, getting it out of the beard was something very humorous and something that took a lot of time. And it took a lot of time for doing something insignificant. So when someone was really deep in their grief, they used to throw a couple of betalach around in the shul. And somehow that's the way everyone, see, when you hear about it, you give a little smile. And that smile, when you are in grief, is mamish gavaldik. It doesn't take away the grief, but it gives you a breather. If you're happy, unless you love being depressed. If you love being depressed, it's horrible. Some people love being depressed. So we were criticized in the past. How can you do that? People are mourning. Why are you? What I'm saying now is the way things used to be. Right now, very few people mourn enough. They don't mourn. They're just going through the route. It means when people go and sit Eicha, I'm not saying that no one. There are people that get into it. Many people need to make an effort to get into it. It's like a younger person. Think about a younger person. We are like the younger. A younger person, they don't know grief. They don't know what it is. And they hate it. Like, leave me alone, you depressed person. Go be depressed on your own. Depression, my Zayda was depressed. That's how people think. So when a person is not depressed, compounded with what can happen in the men's section in many Chabad shuls, they bring beans, forget about betalach, and you have a color war with beans. It's such a chilul Hashem. It's like, what can I tell you? It's such a chilul, it's so sacrilegious.
They throw beans at each other?
Yeah, it becomes a bean fight.
During Eicha?
I can say like this, I can say that I know many people here, not only that left Chabad, not Chabad, they left Chabad. So they left Chabad. That they ultimately left religion because of it. Uh-huh. That's how bad, because...
I've never heard of such.
You know, so they're saying it's horrible. It used to be... In other words, imagine you're going to a Shiva home. Imagine, do this in a Shiva home. Go to a Shiva home, and then fight, and go in there, and when the person is crying about a loss, go bomb them with beans. That person should be arrested. That person is the most it's a psychopathic. You know why people do it, sadly for me, is because the shul has nothing to do with God. The shul has nothing to do with anything holy. Shul is a social fun place. And that is something that I have to mourn for, that it got to there. This is something that I speak out every year, and shockingly, I have to speak about it every year, and people push back. No, I'll speak about it every year. I don't care about the beans. I care about if one believes in God, if one believes in what we're doing. You know, what's Tisha B'Av is important. What Hasidim do wisely is that when a person is in grief, we try to lift the mood. I believe that people have to learn how to get into grief, because people are not that connected. I'm not talking to anyone specifically. I'm speaking in general. And when you tell a person to go cry for the Churban Habayis, I think that's a very high bar. I don't think most people can genuinely cry that the temple was destroyed. I think when you speak about my temple, my Kedusha, remember how you felt vis-a-vis your neshama when you were a child, if you were lucky, if you had that experience, or if you had a holy experience. And if you never had a holy experience, think about the things in your life that were wholesome, and they're no longer wholesome. Everyone has that. Begin there, and it's emes. You're not forcing a mourning. You're telling a person, think about that which is unwhole. And what's the purpose of doing that? The purpose of doing that is that the goal is to go from there to becoming whole again. The goal is to go from a place of conflict to a place of peace. But if I don't understand my conflict, I'll never get to my peace. So I want to come back over here. And that's this time of the year. It makes it a lot more meaningful for me. Not that I care that much. I don't know. I think people get older. Yeah, meat or no meat, for me, I believe in protein personally. I can have fish. I can have eggs. I'm mamish fine. I don't care about that. I don't care about the laundry. I don't like fasting, but fasting is very healthy. That's the way I use it. I tell myself, fasting is so healthy. It's worth it. So, but none of this is the soul of the time. It's not a dangerous time. When a person is in grief, that I know, I lost a father. I felt when you are in grief, you don't care that much to do things that are superfluous. It's like a natural thing. It's, you know, you're not forcing. Don't go swimming.
Does it matter how you get into the grief?
Well, I think that we have responsibilities. I'm a father. Mm-hmm. My responsibility is to know for me, and to role model for my kids and for the people around me, how to get into the grief. That's exactly what this
moment
is.
What you think about, like what you meditate.
That's exactly what I'm doing right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I believe that telling people go cry that the temple was destroyed is don't begin from there. Mm-hmm. Even though I know that there's a piece in me that has that naturally, but I want to expand that. And if someone doesn't have that, they're going to feel bad that they don't have it, and you're not going to get anywhere. Mm-hmm. Like how? Because it's not rational. How can you cry for something that you don't have? And the people that cry because the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, know that you're very lucky. Know that God gave you a big neshama. It's a big thing, this. But I don't want to talk about that because I know people that cannot get there. So they feel like you're not talking to me. Mm-hmm. Talking to me is that when the temple was destroyed, that opened up the possibility for all of us to have parts in our lives that are destroyed. And no, it's not healthy to spend the whole time thinking about it. Maybe we get too therapeutical over here, but I'm saying the 9 days is mamish the time. This is not about tshuva, about sinning. That's Elul. This is about what's broken and where am I trapped. And let me understand these two categories. I am asleep and I'm trapped. I don't have to make it up. I'm just giving words to that which is. And if I'll focus on it, I'm going to feel a little bit down. And you know what? When I feel a little bit down, throw a bean on me. Then yeah, when a person is very down, then try to bring some simcha. But it's healthy to be down. So what does asleep mean? It's simple and it's so deep. Asleep means that there are many areas in my life that things are not okay on any level that you want to talk about, simply because I don't know right from wrong. I don't know what the right thing to do is. And therefore, I made mistakes, not because I had a yetzer hara, not because I had a weakness. No, I thought I was doing the right thing. And we all get into trouble from that. And we all break things because of things, choices that we made that came from us being asleep. Then you look back and say, what was I thinking? So many things. The way we are with ourselves, the way we educate our kids. How many times do a person hear, oh, I wish I knew that. I wish someone told me that because I was doing things differently. Not because I liked it that way. I wasn't even doing things differently because it was easier. Many times I did things that were harder, but I did it wrong. And it's a chaval. it's a chaval because life is precious. And you know, yesterday is not coming back. I know that we're all young and we're going to have a long life, God willing. But it's sad. It's sad. It's sad that how much opportunity did we lose? How much of interactions with our kids, had we simply known certain things, could have been much better for them. And not feeling, saying, since I can't do anything about it, so just not feeling that sadness, I don't think is human. I don't think is healthy. Part of me becoming more enlightened is connected with me realizing that there is many, many big things and little things that I keep on doing, that I'm doing because I am still asleep in that area. And we shouldn't minimize that. And that type of challenge is relatively easily remedied. And that is, the Alter Rebbe says that mishpat, judgment is to think, to discern, that the judgment that we can reach, which is a real good judgment, like we are able to make the right judgment, it's predicated by the fact that we use the Torah as our guide. Not just the letter of the law. It's not enough, the letter of the law. We need our own seichel. People that don't have Torah, they only have their mind, could make big mistakes, to make bad judgment calls. And by the way, we do plenty of that with the Torah. But having the Torah gives me a lot of hope. Gives me hope that if I have a question as to what's the right way and what's the wrong way, and it's very confusing. People think that now that everyone has access to a lot more information, there is a great part of it. And it's also very confusing because a lot of the information that you hear is packaged beautifully. It mamash sounds right, might be wrong. And might be wrong. You can hear something and you can do it, and then you can find out 2 years later. Think about in the world of health, just there. How many things were we told this is the right healthy way, and now we know that this is the opposite? And that's not only concerning health, that's concerning everything. So let's go, we're living in darkness. We're living in darkness. We're looking in the wrong place. We don't even know where to look. So first of all, to acknowledge that, if we would have had better information, every person around this table, everyone listening to this recording, we would be in a completely different place and a different, better. And part of the tragedy of the 9 days and of Golus is that we're given 120 years. Let's make the best of it. We're not making the best of it because we are in the dark. We're sleeping through life. That's what I mean by sleeping. Not that we're not active. We're active, even worse. We're active the wrong way. We don't know. The good thing is, it's so good to know that we don't know. It's good to know that we don't know. If a person thinks that they know, they'll never know. The growth that everyone has in their life in knowing came first by realizing, oi gewalt, I don't know. The end of your growth is when you know. That's, you're dead. Not God forbid begashmias, but you're that's it. You know, I know. And it's very frustrating because on one hand, what are you telling me? I should not know? How can I live without knowing? I have to know. So you got to know how to deal with that. That what you know is good enough for the you of yesterday, but if you want to grow, you have to question everything, like a child that knows nothing, and they really grow because they keep on asking why and what, they know nothing. I know people that are that way, that even when they get older, they're very curious, and they're very humble. They never come with authority. Oh, this I know. This you know, then you're in trouble. I mean, you might know more than me, but only God knows. What do you know? What does anyone really, really know? We don't. And we have the Torah, so we have the source, and it's not that going from the Torah to knowing is so easy. That's why it doesn't say, Tzion b'Torah yipada. Tzion b'mishpat. Mishpat means that I have to shvitz like a judge, like when you're a judge, and we are all judges. You have to make a judgment call. When you have to make a judgment call, it's not so easy. If you appreciate that the topic being judged is very important.
But the knowledge is not the knowledge of knowing the laws in order to be judged on?
Even when we speak about knowing the laws, even knowing the laws, knowing how to apply the law in the book to the law of your life, it takes a lot of humility, takes a lot of hard work, takes a lot of enlightenment.
Also, there's a lot of things that don't even have, like, you know you're supposed to do chinach, but then how you're supposed to do chinach.
Everything, exactly. Like, what did you mean by your question? Like
you need to make your case in order to get the law. You know, if it's under a law, what I see is a courtroom and defend yourself. This is
No. Life, you're not the defendant and you're not the persecutor. You're the judge.
I'm the judge?
Yes.
Of what's right or wrong.
Yes, you're the judge. Very good. Very good. I'm good this came up. You're the judge. Things are happening to you, but we're focusing on the part of you that there's a part of you, a part of all of us, hopefully, theoretically, that once we know what the right thing to do is, we'll do it. I want to speak about the part of me that is not struggling with doing. I just want to know what the right thing is. A chassid, right? We have a rebbe. One of the benefits, I know that this is a secondary thing, but we fell in love with this, chassidim, is that when we had a doubt, we asked the Rebbe what to do. You know how helpful that is? You know how much pain that we saved ourselves from? No. Did we always follow through? We'll get to that soon. No, we didn't. But many times we did. And even when we didn't, at least we were awake. We had the right judgment call. Think about your life. How many decisions did you make that you can say to yourself that, by the way, we believe be'emes, that even though I made the right choice, I made many bad judgment calls, but I am exactly where Hashem wants me to be. Let me go down. I embrace where I'm at, but I wanted to go further, better. I have to look back and not repeat mistakes. So I'm here, I'm meant to be here, but I made many mistakes in my life. And many of those mistakes were not mistakes of weakness. They were mistakes of being blind. They were mistakes of being asleep. They were mistakes of not knowing or thinking that which is right, I thought that was wrong. That which I thought was wrong was the right thing. I didn't know. Our kids here are going out on Shidduchim. You know how you, like, you have compassion on them. How are they to know? So part of the because of we don't know, we are not given, we can make an argument, we are not given the tools that we would have wanted to properly go through life. Every human being has the right to say that. Nothing wrong with that. Now, at the same time, it's b'hashgacha pratis. But the what am I mourning about? I'm mourning about the fact that part of me is still asleep. Chaval. That, to go from asleep to awake, there's a lot of hope.
That's already harder for me, though, because the part of me that's asleep is unconsciously asleep. There's the other part of me that knows that I still can't do. That part I can mourn, because I know that this is right and I'm still not doing this thing. But the part of me that's asleep is...
Okay, I'm with you. I agree with that. Okay, let's just say that's two different types of golos. This is not disconnected from the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Make no mistake that when the Beis HaMikdash was standing, I gave a good example of the Rebbe for this. When the Beis HaMikdash was standing, we got so much direction, mamish, from the Beis HaMikdash. The ultimate was the Kohen Gadol with the Urim V'Tumim. But it's not just that. When we walked into the Beis HaMikdash, we were invested with Ruach HaKodesh, all of us. Can you imagine? You go to a place, and your eyes open up. Whatever the experience with the Rebbe, we didn't have eyes. He had the eyes. We just listened to him. Imagine going to a place and you see things much better.
Was it only when they were there?
Only when we were there, but we had the option to go there. You know how many people that you read in Tanakh, they had a question, they went there. You had an issue, you went to the Beis HaMikdash.
But then that's also, I don't understand how if they had that Ruach Kodesh, they could do all the things that would destroy the temple. Like, I start to get lost.
No, I'm not lost. So let's go weiter.
How do they get lost?
So I'll tell you. So let's go. Now, there's another area in life in which we have to be emancipated from. Over there, waking up and being asleep is not the issue. So, whichever one is more tragic, whichever one you want to mourn for, it doesn't make a difference. And that is, at least to acknowledge that even when we really know the right from the wrong, we know what's good, even selfishly, like for our own health, this is a healthy behavior and this is an unhealthy behavior. Or beruchni is the same thing. When it's, like you said, when it's clear in the Torah, we don't need to make big judgments called. I know that eating kosher is good for my neshama. Eating treif is not good for my neshama, etc., etc. The basic mitzvahs in the Torah. Every person has certain parts of their lives that it's not about you knowing the right from the wrong, that however you'll explain it. Bad habits, addictions, yetzer hara, bad friends, blame it on everyone. I'm always the innocent victim. I don't care how I'm going to frame it. The bottom line is that I am stuck. Mamish like a hostage. I can't help myself.
I don't know if I feel like a hostage in those. Like, here's a perfect example. I rely on the 18 minutes much more than I would like to. It's not good for my neshama when I'm like in the 18 minutes trying to rush to do those things. Like, it would really just be better for me if I had wrote the wrong time that Shabbat started, you know, before, and then not go into the 18 minutes. But as much as I know that, and I know that I could just, you know, put the thing in the oven an hour before, and then I'm not going to have this struggle, like I'm not going to go into candlelighting frazzled. I just don't. I know better. I say every week once we get into Shabbos, I'm never doing that again. And then
so first of all, for the listeners, this is a very lofty example, so it must be coming from a very lofty woman. Halavai, we should all be struggling in that holy area. I'm not taking away the struggle, but I would say that that same struggle doesn't only manifest. I'm not talking to you personally. Yeah. It manifests in many other areas in our life that are a lot more consequential. A lot more consequential. This is not because I'm minimizing.
What's whatever, more consequential than making Shabbos like on time?
Really hurting another person? Damaging our children?
Yes.
Okay. Let's stop at that. And there are many attitudes and behaviors that I mean, clearly when we say the Second Temple was destroyed, because most of human failure, most of our historical failure was much less between man and God, not because we were tzaddikim. It was between man and men. That's a fact. That between man and God, compounded with the fact that God doesn't get damaged by us and that God is infinitely forgiving. So whatever failings we had vis-a-vis Hashem is so much easier resolved vis-a-vis if I hurt someone else, which we're constantly doing. We're doing good also. We're just focusing on if I'm hurting someone else, then ultimately I have to be part of their healing. It's very complicated to get out of that mess. Mm-hmm. I think anyone with children, we give them life. You women, you actually make them alive. You bring them into the world. And at the same time, the damage that we do to them, my daughter will be listening, saying, exactly. That's what I'm giving her words. Yeah, we hurt them. We hurt them on purpose. I hope not. I don't think I did that. But I'm saying this. I'm talking about that. So that. But I'm not minimizing your example.
That part, part that I do to my
but it's
kids
all the same thing. It's all the same thing. We can't help ourselves.
No, because the part that with my kids is the part that I'm asleep. If I really knew better,
no,
I would
I
do
disagree
better.
With that. So I want to tell you.
If I would do better, if I knew anything better, I would do for sure, 100%.
Okay, so not you personally.
Okay.
No, I think that part of human condition, and we all have to struggle with that. And if we don't see that, we can never be freed of it. Mm-hmm. Is to begin with the premise that unless one is a tzaddik, if we are a benini, which we are, there will be areas in my life in which even though I know the right from the wrong, I know it as book smart, I know it in my brain, but when the reality comes, I cannot help myself.
What's one example of that with
anger?
Kids? Okay. Like just yelling at them for something they don't deserve?
Yelling at them, period? I can go more, but I have Rachmanis. It's not
no,
nice.
I'm saying, even when, but even when,
okay, let's go to anger.
Like, Ruach shtus, like you're not home.
Doesn't matter. That's what I'm talking about. Why did you get angry? Do you know? In other words, when the child is little, you're human. You're human. So you got frustrated. You came to your, someone pushed you over your limits. But the consequence, on the perspective of a child, of getting shouted out, especially if they're sensitive. Mm-hmm. For something that's really not in their universe significant for that type of reaction. Mm-hmm. It could be by divine providence at such a bad timing for them. And we know that. We make believe we don't know that. We know it when it's happening, but we can't stop ourselves. Mm-hmm. That would be, I think, a better example than your 18 minutes. I'm not minimizing your 18 minutes. And it gets worse.
I mean, I guess where the difference is that those ones, I really don't feel like I can control. But the ones with the
okay, I'm talking about that you can't control. So that's what I'm saying. So that's called a hostage. You just acknowledged that there are certain moments in which there's a certain behavior that you know should not be coming out, but you cannot control. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm talking about. And someone telling you, but you shouldn't do it, will not help. It's going to help now because you're not triggered now. But when your kid knows exactly what button to push, you are a hostage to yourself, to your limitation. And if someone says, well, every human being is that way, no one is perfect. If no one mourns, that's the thing. If that's where mourning is good, because some people say, okay, I'll cut myself slack. And by the way, there's the right time. There is a time to cut yourself slack, but there is a time for you to look at that and say, oh my God. Look how horrible, and I can't even help myself. That's why it's even worse. I can't even help myself, because if I can help myself, there's hope. Here I'm saying I cannot help myself. And I think only when people, that's my chelem joke, when people see that, that means I know where I'm at, and I know that I can't even help myself. Actually, I know where I want to be. I know where I want to be. Then there is actually, I am worthy now of God helping me. God will take me out of my limitation and he'll bring me to my ideal place of being. And part of being worthy is to know where I'm at. And tzedakah, the way that Rebbe explains it, it's so beautiful. And we all know this. Let's speak about grief. That one of the best ways out of grief, if it's used properly with the right limit, is to completely get out of yourself. Completely. When someone is deep in darkness, and then they, tzedakah, meaning not giving a dollar, which is great, but giving of yourself, and giving of yourself in a way that while you're in the tzedakah, you are bechlal not focused on yourself. You're not looking at yourself, which is how most of us should be most of the time. That on all these levels, it's going to take you out of your darkness. It makes a person worthy of redemption. V'shaveha b'tzedakah. And I'm not minimizing people giving money, because ultimately, money is something that people, in their perspective, they worked a lot to get their money. They worked a lot. God gave them their money, but they worked a lot. And giving that away and what this represents is something very difficult. And if it's not difficult for you, then again, you're from the lucky people. That's because you gave a lot of tzedakah, or your parents gave a lot of tzedakah. That's because, you know, you are redeemed already. So tzedakah for you would mean getting yourself involved in something that it has nothing to do with you. At occasion, I teach chassan classes for people in Sola. And one of the things that I meet the chassan and kala one time, one of the things that I suggest is that on their day of the wedding, if they could, they should go someplace and do volunteer work, and no one should know who they are and that they're getting married that day. And that's the best preparation for your marriage. Instead of just focusing on, now some of it is not practical because even the chassan, but the kala for sure, you got to do your hairs, you got to do your nails, you got to have a seder. It's not a contradiction. It's not either or, it's both. But spending, just like we advocate this, and Tehillim is gewaldic, it's this and that, that's tzedakah. Being freed. If I will do something for the greater good, which I will free myself from myself, then Hashem will do the same thing to me. But not the way I'm doing it. I'm doing it as I'm forgetting about myself. God, at that moment, I'm worthy that God should go into me and He should give me something that right now I don't have. Right now, I can, when certain things happen, my reaction, I know it's not the right reaction, but I can't stop it. God will gift me the gift of being able to stop it. And how great will that be? And it's much greater than what we think. In other words, I think most people, that's what you said before, which one is worse? Most people, they see their limit and they make peace with that which they know they can't change. And Emes, I cannot change parts of me, but God could. And not only God could, that I, through my choices and through my attitudes, I can become worthy. I cannot control it. I cannot guarantee it. Hashem is going to take me out of galus. But there is a part that I have, and I better do my part. And for me to do my part, I have to be motivated. And for me to be motivated, I have to see at times how not good it is. And that will bring about grief. And this is the time that we're in. That's the time. That's the 9 days. And that's why it's amazing how on one hand, the 9 days is the saddest time of the year. And on the other hand, again, Hasidim, we see something special in this time. And there's a certain type, we make siyumim and we celebrate. And Mashiach is born on Tisha B'Av. Yeah, Mashiach is born on Tisha B'Av. That means that I will only be redeemed if I first see that I am trapped. If I don't see that I'm trapped, I'll never be redeemed. Especially when it comes to the type of redemption that we are talking about. Because if I'm, even when I know where I'm trapped meaning I cannot get out of it. Most people just, they say, okay, it is what it is. I can't. There is an I can't that's healthy, and there is an I can't that's a cop-out. And we have to have mishpat. Again, we have to have judgment to know which one is which. People that spend time doing this in the 3 weeks and the 9 days have a much more meaningful time than keeping of the halachas becomes emes, not something that's forced. Oh, I can't have this. I can't do that. Can't wait for it to be over. Who wants to live that way? I don't want to live that way. Used to be that way for me. Like, you just get it be over with. For many people, Tishrei is the same thing because it's too hard. Because it's too hard. Don't make it so hard. We have to figure out how to live in a way as we get better. We're not changing the rules. God forbid, the opposite. We're becoming so aligned with the rules that every time, every period is great. Great, celebrate. You want to mourn? Let's get our bang for our buck. Let's mourn the right way. And we are all in mourning. Just comes out the wrong time, irrational times. People they break down or they get very sad. They don't even know exactly where it's coming from because all of the things that they were ignoring was ignored. So at some point it gives out. And in a very down to earth way, just going back to the Maimon, Tzion, that Rebbe says like this, Tzion refers to a part in ourselves that's so lofty, it can never get trapped. Never gets trapped. But it dissociates. Disconnects. It doesn't allow itself to be inside the problem. It goes out of the problem. But we need that. We have to bring it back. We bring it back through Torah study. When a Yid learns Torah, Tzion, again, referring in this Maimer to the highest part of the Jewish neshama, wants to be where Torah is happening. And that has a lot of enlightenment. In other words, where does the judgment call come from? It comes from something inside you that's very wise and very knowing. But not my ego knowing, a godly knowing. But how do I touch that? By learning Torah. And people in my world have that experience. Amish. I'm not talking about book smart. Tzion b'mishpat tipada. Tipada means you'll be awake, you'll be woken up, and you'll be able to make the right judgment calls. And the morning, again, coming back, the morning is that we should look in our lives and spend some time seeing how horrible of a judge I was in the past. It's good to see that. And it's very humbling. Like, ugh, I made such a bad decision. And I really thought I was doing the right thing. That type of grief. And grieve. And then take a bean and throw it in your head. And make yourself happy. And then look at the other parts of your life in which I always had the right information. I can't help myself. And grieve for that. And it's scary. And be careful. Don't fall into the deep end. Illness. Illness is something that we cannot help. It's just an example. It's part of life. Someone gets sick. Your sister got nothing you can do. You can go out of your mind. There's nothing you can do. That part of life. But gosh, means I took care of my health. I did the right thing. And then a person gets a diagnosis. What do you do with that? It's very humbling. It's like, it means no matter what I do, God is running my life. This is not up to me. So now what do I do? Tzedakah. Tzedakah tatzal mimavis. I'm not talking about as a school, as a tit for tat, but the concept. How do people live? How do people live with things that they cannot help? They do the greatest amount of tzedakah. How much tzedakah came out of your sister's passing? Crazy. And Torah learning, this is what happens. Did it resolve the way we wanted before Mashiach? No. But there's something to it. You can't say there's not, there's something to that. And you people get a nechama on some level. That's the nechama. That's the Nechama. And just to conclude with a couple of just basic Chazar Halachas, it's a very unusual Shabbos because Shabbos is Erev Tisha B'Av. Shabbos ends when the stars come out, whatever that is. But the fast begins on Shabbos. Because the fast begins by sunset. I know that last week candle lighting was 7:42. I'm giving you more or less. So the fast more or less begins at 5 to 8. Shabbos is not out 5 to 8. So just to know that little technical thing. Another thing is that we eat a meal before the fast. Again, we're not forcing it. It's just a natural thing. You're going to fast. Go have a meal. However, and what do you eat? You eat whatever works better for you. For most people my age, eating a lot of food is the worst thing to do, mamish. It's about hydration. It's about, and you have to just have a bissel seichel, like mishpat. Go learn. Go inform yourself. What to eat in order to fast the best that you could. And what we do is that we daven mincha a bit earlier. The men will go back, I'm just guessing, around, let's say, 6 o'clock. So they'll be back home 6:30, more or less. And then we have the su'udas ha-mafsekes, which normally we eat on the ground before Tisha B'Av, and we have the egg. We don't do any of that on Shabbos. You have whatever is the best for you to prepare for the fast. The fast begins, let's say, around 5 to 8. This is a Tavshin Pei Hei for the people that are in the recording, but I'm off a little bit, but I'm close to what it is. And then we're going to call Maitiv, I would say, 15 minutes after Shabbos ends to give everyone enough time to say Baruch HaMavdil, which takes a couple of seconds, but to get into, you know, I dress Shabbos clothing, Matzah Shabbos. That's a side thing. It's a good thing to wear your Shabbos clothing on Matzah Shabbos. I know for younger people who like going out, it's difficult. Okay, it's not the end of the world. Let's not make our battle over there. But if you need to change, whatever. Do whatever you feel you need to do. We take off our shoes at the end of Shabbos. We don't take off our shoes on Shabbos. I'm talking about people who wear leather shoes. If you don't wear leather shoes, it's just fine to go with the shoes that you're wearing. We're going to go to shul, we'll daven ma'ariv, we sit down on the ground, we read Megillas Eicha, we read it all together.
Do you say anything for Abdallah?
So, there's the verbal Havdalah that we say in Shmoyna Esrei, which is a longer version of Baruch HaMavdol Ben Kodesh L'Chol. The actual Havdalah is made Sunday night. And just to know, Stam, that if a person finds oneself in a place where there's nothing to make Havdalah on, which is rare, because you could make Havdalah even on tea. You can make it on orange juice. In America, you can make it on Coca-Cola. I'm not saying you should drink that. It's very, very unhealthy. But whatever, there's many options, even though ideal on wine. But if you find yourself in a place, a person is in jail, they have nothing, they have water, then you can make Havdalah until Tuesday night. Anyways, we make Havdalah Sunday night. If I'm not wrong, we make the bracha on the candle. I'll check it up. I think we make the bracha on the candle Matzah Shabbos. That we can do, that we do in shul.
No psalmim
because we're, I have to make sure. That's what I remember from last time it happened, that we make the bracha on the candle, and then we're not going to do psalmim Sunday night. Psalmim we only do right after Shabbos leaves. We're going to do Havdalah Sunday night and Kiddush Levana Sunday night for the men who do Kiddush Levana. No, Yaknahaz is close. No, very good. Yaknahaz is when Shabbos going into Sunday is Yom Tov. Shabbos going into Yom Tov. There we do Yayin Kiddush Havdalah Zman Yaknahaz. Yeah, here we don't have Kiddush, but we have Havdalah, but not over wine.
Right.
Other than that, it's a normal Tisha B'Av. Whoever could. Again, I know by the letter of the law, the main morning is until noon. So even if you have to work, I'm talking people who work for a parnos, I'm not talking about the household. Whatever you could not do until midday, try not to do. Why? Because if I would really feel grief, when a person is in grieving, this I know, you don't want to do anything. You don't have the koyach. When a person is in real grief, they don't do anything. So in the ideal world, feel the grief, and it should be natural. But I don't live in the ideal world. So I'm following the book. But I would love to be there. So when we read them, so when we learn about all these halachas, the goal will be a redeemed world, maybe Mashiach will come. But before Mashiach's coming, the redemption is to make all of this real. It's real. Grief is real. And you know what? People that grieve, people feel joy. People who know how to cry for the right reasons at the right time, these are people that mamish celebrate when it's the right time. People that think there's some virtue in never grieving, never looking at that which is broken in my life, these are people that can never fully rejoice. And the sages therefore say that whoever mourns for Yerushalayim will rejoice in the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And the Rebbe promised us, and just going on that is enough for us, we're Hasidim, that we will merit the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And that's going to be a big simcha. Not just the building and everything else that we are stuck in is going to be remedied with the coming of Mashiach, with the teaching of the Torah of Mashiach. May we merit that it should happen this year. Amen.